Hello, everybody. Welcome back to a brand new episode of The War Room. I'm your host, Mike Overton, and joining me in the co-host seat this week is the wonderful Joseph Hurley. How are you, sir?
Hi, Mike. How are you? Thanks very much for having me on.
No worries. Our guest this week, you may have seen him from some earlier Star Wars animated shows and a very small animated show called Star Trek Lower Decks. My guest this week is Barry J. Kelly. How are you,
Hello.
Sir?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Nice to meet you guys.
Thank you for being here. So how did you kind of get into the animation side of things?
Well, I like all of us, I was into sci-fi and watching Star Trek and Star Wars, and reading comic books. The comic books and drawing is kind of what I was really, really wanted to do, you know, like, my brother drew, I always copied him. My dad drew a little bit, I copied them. And then I just kind of started to take it seriously a little bit, you know, like, which just means like I did it probably more hours than I spent playing video games or something like that. And I still played a lot of video games, of course, but and when we got into high school, my age is showing a little bit, but there was a little program called Photoshop. I don't know. What was it? It could have been like 3 or 4 and Final Cut Pro 1 and Adobe Flash. Like, we pretty much got access to these computers and stuff that like the teachers didn't exactly know how to teach like the program. So like, we were just kids messing around on a program. Like, they knew Final Cut. We kind of learned video editing like very early on.
Yeah.
And it was like a classroom full of Macs. Sorry, PC fans. It was a Mac grant or something for the school, and we had this computer lab with all this software. And I kind of got to, you know, explore Photoshop, Final Cut, and I always wanted to draw comics and stuff. But like, I could draw for like my friends in high school, and then once I kind of got into like professional territory, I was like, oh, I don't know how to draw at all. It's like you learned what the pros do and there's what you do, and you're like, oh, you're not qualified at all to do this stuff. But so I kind of like was like, okay, well, I'm gonna learn cameras. And I went to film school at Full Sail, this like quick trade school in Florida. And again, it was kind of the same thing where I could draw okay for them, but then once I got into the real world of art, I was like, oh, I can't draw at all. I didn't go to art school. I kind of just self-taught, read books. I met a few comic book artists. You know, there was this guy in Florida I met named Arn Starr, who was like a comic book convention Star Trek guy. It's funny how many times Star Trek kind of pops into my life. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that was like a weird life-changing moment in a way, because this guy was kind of the first guy to tell me, you don't know how to draw. I'm like, what do you mean? And he kind of was like, well, if you look at all these artists and these things, they're doing all these things that you don't do. And he was an inker for comics, and he was like, he would do like convention drawings of like, you know, like pencil and airbrush stuff. Like, some of those 90s pencil and airbrush drawings might have been his, but that was kind of like the first like kind of kick in the butt for me.
And like, when you were growing up, Aaron Barry, what kind of comics were you reading in terms of, say, like, was it just graphic novels or the weekly kind of?
I mean being a child of the 90s, the image boom was happening, and I didn't know what was the politics of Marvel DC Image at the time. But when I grew up, it was like X-Men was hitting big in the 90s, and then all of a sudden Spawn hit. And then I pretty much had a collection of like X-Men, Spider-Man, Batman growing up. But I was buying Wizard, like Wizard was big at the time, if you remember Wizard magazine. And they would have little how-to draw sections in there, and I would kind of copy from those. It was a Greg Capullo's how to draw sections. And then when I got older, like, me and my brother got a little bit more serious into it, and like Preacher was a big deal. Yeah. The Authority was a big deal. Like, I remember reading Watchmen before I understood it, and I'm like, this is kind of a weird comic. I don't get it. I don't know, but they say it's the best one. Like, I feel like there was maybe we all had like that phase where like I was going through like, oh, this is the top 10 graphic novels you should read. Didn't understand any of them, and then here's the top 100 movies, AFI someone. I went through all of them, watched 2001. It kind of blew my mind, but I didn't like it. You know, I was like, I don't get
this. Yes, I'm the same as you on that. Yeah,
but 2001 is like, it's like Watchmen in a way, where it's like every a few years you catch it on TV or you watch it and you get some sort of like new understanding, or maybe you find some layer that you didn't know or something. It's like, oh, weird. This movie like kind of grows with you as you get old. It's weird. Like it's what makes it a timeless classic.
And but Barry, like, just like when you were doing your drawing and on your own and things like that, do you remember the first time you say fully put something together and you said, this is really good. And I'm really proud of what I've done here on my own.
It might have been in high school. I was trying to get like hardcore like pen and ink, and I was like, I think I was trying to draw like Brian Hitch, who drew The Authority and The Ultimates at a certain point, and I was like trying to hit his inking style, and it was more like hitting like a Captain America or a Spider-Man, where I hit like the webbing right, and I hit like the black ink for the blue areas. Like it wasn't full blue; it was like you put a little bit of blue in, like the blue is the highlight. It was hitting little copy stuff like that. Another one was like copy. I don't know if you remember those X-Men cards in the 90s. It was Jim Lee's X-Men cards.
Yeah.
I used to like, I copied like a Cyclops or two from there. And I was, it was more copy stuff. We're like, oh, I could do this. I copied it. I copied it pretty well. I didn't trace it. I looked at it. It was like observational drawing, like clicking in my head. But like, you know, it was like putting all the style on the page, but without any of the foundation though. Like, you know, it's like if you look at it again, you're like, oh, the mouth doesn't really line up with the jaw, and the hand doesn't really line up with the arm, but it looked good to me. It clicked, you know. But getting like after I was at Full Sail, and I you know, kind of just, I just learned cameras for like a year essentially. And then I moved out to LA, and again, I found myself in the situation where like, I don't know how to draw compared to the pros. Yep. And but I knew editing, I knew compositing, I knew After Effects, I knew some animation and stuff like that. So I found myself in this weird niche where I was trying to draw and tell stories in a film, like filmmaking and animation. I don't know why I never thought about it. I watched cartoons my whole life. Like Batman, the animated series was a big deal. You know, I watched all the Transformers. I grew up on the G.I. Joe stuff. You know, it was all, you know, they were, you know, mind controlling us to buy toys and stuff, you know. It's like there was marketing people planning like getting me to buy toys by putting cartoons on the air, you know. But like,
Barry, hang on a second. I have to ask you a question. Then Batman the Animated Series. What is your favorite episode?
Ooh. Oh man, that's a toughie. I have to narrow it down to a few. The Robot Batman one, it shouldn't make sense that it's like the most popular one. Like it's like it's like a season after that whole robot people taking over Gotham as robots. But Batman having to fight Batman robot and kill Batman robot, or no, Batman robot kills himself. It was traumatizing. He like throws himself into like an electrical computer and fries himself, and it was like, holy crap. But like one I really liked was like, I think it's the Joker. There's a bunch of great Joker ones, but there's one Joker one that I particularly like, where he puts laughing gas in a garbage barge, and it like, you know, the garbage like seeps into Gotham. People start laughing. But I liked it so much because it was like the only one where the Tim Burton theme came back, like official. Like Shirley Walker was the composer, and like she was his protege or whatnot. And like the Danny Elfman theme comes back. The real Batman one comes back. Right? From the 1989 one. And it was like the only episode that I think did that. He's just running down trying to get to Joker, and it's like a little montage. And that always like felt really cool. Like it kind of like told me, oh, there's the movie version of this character, then there's the cartoon of this character. There's little things that kind of trigger. They're like, oh, you can have different variations on these icons, right? That like appear in different cases, but they can all kind of like live in the same, I don't know, they all feel the same even though they're different universes, I guess is the right way. But that the little things like that kind of like triggered in my head. But Batman, I'm trying to think, what other cartoons? X-Men was a big one. Those Saturday morning cartoons were all big. Batman's kind of been the timeless one that's kind of lasted, surprisingly. I think when I was a kid, I was like, well, this one looks like, you know, this doesn't have as much detail as the other ones or whatever. And now like those ones with so much detail like look like crap. And this one, Batman, still holds up because they were right. They made like a timeless style that still looks great today. But after I moved to LA, I found myself like working in animation, working at some smaller studios, just kind of like being like, you know, in these scenarios where like there's only four of us and we're trying to like figure out, you know, trying to do client jobs essentially. And I'm kind of like learning stuff on the fly, like animation and compositing and how to get better at it. And then that was like 10 years. And in that time, I was trying to learn how to draw. So it's like I was trying to learn how to draw. I was taking sculpting workshops. Like I didn't have there's an amazing school out here called Art Center that I wish I had known about. It's really expensive now. Like it's but amazing artists come out of there. Like it's a very great foundational school for artists. But
at this point in your life, what were you kind of saying to yourself in terms of, this is a very corporate question that I'm going to ask you, in terms of what were you there saying, in 5 years I'm going to be this, in 10 years I want to be that, like, or was it you just saying, I'm really enjoying learning my craft and wherever it takes me, that's great, but was there an overall plan in your head of saying, I want to be a director on an animated show at some point in the future?
Going into film school and coming out to LA, I get very stressed out, clearly. And like the live action film set, being on one stresses me the hell out. Like you have to get up early and then you're there for a long time. And there's like a stress that's like, you got to get your shots before sundown. And if you don't get them, you might not get another chance to get them. And that kind of stress like ingrained in me like a good work ethic, but it also showed me like, this is hard. I don't want to do this. Like a director, like, oh, or I thought like maybe I wasn't capable of doing that. And like, I was like, oh, there's other people who can handle this job much clearly better. So I think I always went with the intention of like, I'll find my place and, you know, I'll just, you know, start to learn how to draw. And if I can edit or something for a show, I'd be lucky. And I think that was my sentiment. And it wasn't like, I think it wasn't until I started working at Titmouse and I made some good friends that I used to like edit storyboards, you know, you're editing animatics and stuff like that. And suddenly I was editing very high-end dynamic storyboards for my directors like Juno Lee and Sung Jun-an. And these are guys who work on Critical Role now. And like, I was editing this dynamic stuff. I'm like, this is what I want to make. Like I didn't realize that there were cartoons that I also wanted to make, like that could get the sense of storytelling that dynamic action that I always wanted to tell, like in my head, like what I read, you know, in comic books and cartoons and stuff like that. Yeah. And when that kind of clicked for me, like I wanted to get serious about it. And that's when I like kind of just went hardcore into trying to figure out what's wrong with my work, what's wrong with my drawings, and try to get better. Like it's like trying to, you know, figure out and admitting that you suck, or what do you suck at, you know, like you can get better, because it's good to know what your strengths and weaknesses are. And sometimes, you know, you're trying to explain to kids now like what you need to improve at without, you know, yeah, demotivating them, but trying to be real with them, you know. It's like, you got to do better at this. But I kind of found myself saying that, and through them, through their work and through their, I mean, also their motivation, they motivated me to get better at it. They took a chance on me, and they gave me storyboarding gigs where I was suddenly like slowly progressing. I was revising. You kind of go through this process of being a revisionist and storyboarding and kind of learning that craft. And then because of my editing and compositing skills, I kind of realized I had this kind of like general knowledge of the whole animation pipeline, because I'd worked in every position pretty much. Like I'd done backgrounds. I've made all the pieces of the cake, you know, and
suddenly
I knew how to direct without even realizing.
Yeah.
Sorry. Would your advice then, Barry, to be somebody who's kind of going through the industry, be open to feedback, be open to kind of acknowledging that you aren't the completed article, that it's going to take time and you're not going to get it right first time. But you need to listen to the people who are more experienced than you and listen to them, kind of listen to the advice they give you.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're going to listen to the good stuff, like the good opinions, you got to take in the bad, you know, or the negative feedback. And I think also, like, you know, learning that when someone says no to you, doesn't mean no forever. It means no for now. It's like the, you know, people who didn't think, maybe who didn't think I was up to speed, you know, back then, you know, a few years later, I found myself working with and working for, and they're like, oh yeah, I remember you were the, you know, guy with those weird drawings or whatever, you know, like, and I was like, oh yeah, that's me. You know, I think feedback is critical. You know, I think, you know, our whole process of making Lower Decks is like feedback too. It's like, we're constantly pitching, like, even if it's not a script per se, like we read a description of something in the script and we're like, we think this is what it looks like, what do you think, Mike? You know, like, this is what we think it is. It's still like a mini pitch in a way. It's a visual pitch of something. And he gives us feedback. And then we kind of like, you know, hone in on what his vision needs to be.
I suppose the thing around that as well is you can't take anything too personally.
Yeah.
Because if you take everything to heart, then you're not going to last 5 minutes, are you?
Yeah, it's easy to get demotivated. Yeah.
Barry, did you ever have any of those situations where you went home, were crying in the shower saying, I just want to go home, forget this, this is all nonsense, what have I done in my life?
Crying in the shower is such a true thing. You just have weeks of slumps where you're like, I mean, even this year sometimes, like, I'll find myself frustrated with my own drawings. Like, I still can't like always draw what I see in my head, and I'm like, what is wrong? Like, why can't I hit this? And then like I have to sleep on it and then come back to it, and I hit it like the next day. I'm like, okay, there it is. Okay, you know, sometimes you're like, sometimes the stuff just comes. It's like, I don't know, songwriting.
You need the fresh eyes.
Yeah,
you need those fresh eyes, don't you? You need to be able to walk away from it, go back to it a day, 2 days later, because you'll think of something that you didn't think of because you were frustrated first time round.
Yeah, like, and it shows, like, when you look back at your old artwork too, if you can see the difference, you're like, that means you're growing. You can see, you can see a clear, you know, evolve, like a evolution of what you did because you were, you know, being hard on yourself or learning, you know.
Do you still have any of those original drawings that you did, like the Spider-Man one, the Cyclops one? Do you ever
just look at them? Yes. Say,
this is how far I've come.
Yeah, I'm sure I do. Not like right here this second, but I know I have them. I'd have to like search them. I have like it's funny, we have done that at the studio where like we bring our box or tub of like just old sketchbooks, and it's like just going through the mind of like, you know, a high school, you know, social anxiety, anti, you know, I don't know, anarchy symbols everywhere, whatever you were drawing, and then the Stooges, and then like, an occasional like drawing your friend as like a superhero or a Naruto or something like that. Those are fun times. Yeah, I'm always curious about like going back and looking and seeing. I have a little bit, like, it's on. I've just moved, so like our place is a mess and there's boxes everywhere, but it is, you know, it's one of those things where you're looking, well, you got comics, you got toys, you got that, and that's one of those things where you kind of stop when you're packing, you're like and you're just like looking at all this old stuff that you're embarrassed by.
But then also that sparks an inspiration then, doesn't it, to actually then do something else.
Yeah, well, it reminds you, like, oh yeah, this is what, wow, I used to be really into this thing and now I'm not anymore, or I forgot I used to really shoot for this and now I do this. Yeah, it just shows like a good, it just shows contrast in yourself, like, and it's not a bad thing at all. It's good.
And Barry, in all the TV shows that you've done over the years and all that, what's the kind of the role that you enjoyed the most? And obviously, look, I know you're a director, supervising director at the moment. Taking that aside, in terms of say animating, editing, whatever the case may be, what's the one that you always look forward to getting involved in?
I mean, I always like reading a script, and like it's kind of like one thing I really enjoy about Lower Decks is like just kind of getting to read the script first and kind of like the first viewer in a way, and it's always like the episode plays out in your head, right? Like, and it's really fun. It's like you get to watch it, and then like that is like really fun because I can see it in my head, and then it's like the task of like, oh man, I gotta make this now. I gotta figure out how to break this down and make. And now, like, I've set my bar high in my head. I think, you know, my expectations, I think, are pretty high. So I'm like, now I have to match this that I've just set for myself in my head. But I do love like breaking down a script and like trying to get like the visual, like, essence and storytelling of the idea. Like, that's kind of where it's at. It's most fun because it's most loose, essentially. Like, if I can break down this story into about like 16 images or drawings or whatever, that just kind of tells those key art sequences. Like, that's kind of like the most free you are at that point. And then once you get to editing, I don't like being an editor, but I love editing. Being an editor, like managing the timelines, managing all the technical stuff, you know, I don't want to do that. But editing, like getting actually to kind of piece together the story and the puzzle, like that feels like the real final, like, script. So that's always fun. Like, it's, and also like the feeling of post is like, oh, everything's done. Like, we've done everything. Like, you've shot, even if live action, I'm like, oh, it's already shot. Oh, good. Yeah, we got all the pieces we need. We're trying to figure out the final looks or everything, like, but at least like the stressful part to me is done. It's like, now it's just trying to put those pieces together and get them in order, you know, so that they...
And Barry, when you're, like, as you said, when you're reading the script and you're saying to yourself, okay, what's this going to look like? What's that going to look like and all that? I remember reading before Nicholas Meyer was saying that sometimes he said, I can't tell a film company that me sitting in the bath for 2 hours is where I do my best thinking. So I'm curious, where do you do your best thinking? Like, do you listen to music? Do you go for a walk? Like, or do you need to be surrounded by other people bouncing ideas off? Or is it a combination of all of them?
It's like, I wish I could narrow it down. Yeah, I was reading the author Murakami, how he like runs and he like gets up at 4 a.m. and runs and writes for like 4 hours and has like a very rigid schedule. I'm like, oh man, I wish I could have that. I wish. It takes me so long to focus. Like, I feel like my clock is like more midday. The few times where I've been able to work at home, like not like now, like a COVID, but like complete freelance on my own, I feel like I don't start working till like 2 p.m., you know, and it's like two to nine is like my schedule. But like, so like no, but I have to be on the 9 to 5 just because majority of our crew is, oops, alarm going off. It takes me a long time to focus. Like, but like when I get there, it's usually like, I feel like it's like 2 hours of like getting up from my desk, sitting down from my desk, getting up, like looking for any reason to get up until finally like, okay, it's due. It's coming. It's due. I need to finish something today. I need to finish something. And it's usually like 3 or 4 hours of trying to focus. And then finally I'll hit like a rhythm for like 2 to 3 hours. And I'm like, boom, 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 boom. And I'm like hitting like a bunch of thumbs or a bunch of roughs. Yeah. And it's really finding that area of concentration. Like when you're storyboarding, there's like a phase of like roughs and cleans and what you call them, thumbnails and cleans. And the thumbnails and the roughs, it's always like where the thinking is. Like I'm trying to make a plan for myself of like, this is where the scene needs to go. These are the beats we need to hit. Yeah. That could be like stick figure drawings. Sometimes I got some audio. I've got like a rough edit, like where I'm just slugging cuts. And I'm like, I'm just playing in my head of like, this is where this needs to happen. This is where this needs to happen. Just kind of guessing. In other words, just the shot progression that I need. And then once I get to cleans, it's like, I don't have to focus as much. Like if it's just trying to make a drawing better, that's like technical stuff. Like it's like, I just got to like make sure the perspective fits. I got to make sure this, like, but it's just kind of like, I'm not trying to be creative at that point. It's like, I've already, my thumb and rough pass has already set the groundwork for that. So all I got to do is just kind of zone out and listen to music. Like zoning out and listening to music is my favorite part probably of that. It's just like having the brain work done. And now I got to do is just like, I got to make it, it's clear in my head. Now I got to make it clear for the viewer. Now I got to make it clear for you. Like it's in there. So like, it's once it's in my head, like it's a relief in a way, and I can just zone out and listen to a podcast or listen to music.
I was about
or
to say something. What kind of music would you listen to? Would you listen to something with kind of lyrics, or would you listen to, yeah, say orchestra music?
That's a good question, because lyrics can distract me a lot. Yeah. It depends. Like if it's a song I've heard like thousands of times, I totally would. Like the other day I was switching between Metallica and Prince. That's a little bit of contrast, but amazing musicians. But like, I've heard those songs so many times that it's fine. Like I can just jam to it. But like, you know, so I got movie soundtracks going. I got Star Trek music going. Sometimes it's just like, like a rain. It's almost like a rainy mood kind of thing. Like
I know what you
app
mean.
On. Yeah, like that.
Like a lo-fi kind of.
You just need something to kind of tune out everything else a little bit, you know, like that, just for that to zone out. But yeah, those don't have lyrics, so that's helpful.
What's your favorite film soundtrack? What's your go-to every time you just want to, what is your go-to?
We're going to judge you based on your answer here, Barry.
I know.
A lot of our movie soundtracks here.
To be fair, mine isn't a Star Trek film. Mine's not a Star Trek soundtrack, but.
Oh my gosh.
I have one that I always go back to when I just want to.
I'm hovering over the boot, Barry, out of the room.
I'm trying to think. Like, I'm like, oh gosh, I can open up my Spotify. I mean, I keep thinking it's probably like a Jerry Goldsmith or a James Horner song. Okay. I mean, I feel like I listen to Superman. I listen to a lot. Superman I listen to a lot, but then like I feel like Alien and Aliens I listen to hand in hand just for like the ambiance, but like the dun 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 dun, dun. Like that's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, like recently, like I could give you like some selections. Like I recently discovered I don't know why, like I always knew the Bond thing, but John Barry stuff is really amazing. I didn't realize how beautiful a lot of his music is. Like there's songs like that like hype me up, and then there's songs that I'm like, wow, this is a really beautiful song. Holy moly, this was in a movie, you know, like going through the catalog, like Ghibli music, like from Ghibli movies is
Ghibli movies. Yeah, they're brilliant.
Like absolutely yeah, brilliant. Like I yeah, Joe Hisashi, right? That's that composer.
Yeah.
That there's some beautiful stuff. Like video games have been, you know, a strong musical force, I guess.
I'm a big fan of the Arkham City soundtrack myself. I
think
absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
I was a little bit in the metal zone, but the latest, I mean, I say latest, this came out like 5 years ago. Devil May Cry, like the last May Cry game, has a pretty hardcore soundtrack that I just like. I played the game that long ago. I'm like, I wasn't paying attention at all. This soundtrack's incredible. Holy moly. I'm trying to think about it, like Sunshine. Who did Sunshine? John Murphy? Was that him?
I want to say
that's an amazing score. Like there's, yeah, there's some pretty incredible stuff. Like, but like, I mean, it's hard to leave John Williams, Indiana Jones. Like, oh man, John Williams is a beast.
It's ludicrous stuff what John Williams put out over the years. Like, it was just like,
is it really bad that I'm not a John Williams fan?
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike has left the interview now.
I mean, I feel like it's like, are you a fan of the John movies he's in or the score? You know, like they can dominate one or the other, you know, your perception of the movie or him. Sorry, go ahead.
So Barry, how did you get into Star Trek then originally?
I had a memory of my brother and sister. I had an older brother and sister. My sister recently passed away, but like they were always watching. You know, I was watching whatever they're watching, but Star Trek was always a thing that my brother watched, but I can't say like we were always like ambitiously watching, but it was always on TV. And I remember just like there were just moments of my life where like I realized the whole family's watching it, and like I didn't realize that, you know, it'd be on even my dad. You know, my dad was into movies too and everything. It was just like weird to, it was rare if we were all actually watching the same thing. But Next Gen, we had my brother had recorded the Next Generation pilot, like, you know, on a VHS tape back in the day with like, you know, it probably had like Superman 3 and some other, you know, some other movie on there, you know, on SLP mode or whatever, like six things were probably taped over, but we had that. And I used to watch the pilot because I liked Data. Data was just like interesting looking to me as a kid, I guess. And the Star Trek motion picture movies were good. Like I always think of, you know, Wrath of Khan was a movie we rented a lot. Spock dying was traumatic for me. I'd said this in another review, but like I watched, my memory of Spock dying and Optimus Prime dying was like in the same day. Like I rented both movies. Like my brother, like I rented Transformers the movie, my brother rented Wrath of Khan, and like I was like just like, what are you doing to me? You know, like it was horrifying. Like both here. And it's funny because I can't remember ever learning who Spock was, but like I remember watching Wrath of Khan, like knowing who he was, or like feeling how important he was, and like them putting their hands on the glass, like I was crying as a kid.
I still cry, don't worry.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. I brought that up to like I'll go and watch Wrath of Khan, you know, if it's in the theater or whatnot, and like I'll bring it up to the guy next to me, or a guy asked me, like, was talking to me about it, and he's like, why would you cry when Spock died? And I was like, what are you doing here? Like I was like, how could you not understand this? Like I was 8 years old, what do you want? But I feel
going to be really bad here, and I'm going to have to say it. Like, I actually find the death of Optimus Prime harder to watch than the death of Spock. I'm really sorry, but like I've got the Transformers the motion picture about 27 times in DVD, Blu-ray, and you know, 4K and all this kind of thing. But I'm really glad you've actually seen the Transformers animated movie, Barry. That really makes me feel a lot better.
It's pretty traumatic. I mean, he turns gray and his like shell's cracked, and they turn the head just to make it really hit on the nose, you know, like you didn't have to turn the head, you could just turn it up black and white. But yeah, really hit it on the nose. But like for Star Trek, like it was like I think just like every, there's kind of a thing where like if a new Star Trek movie was coming out, like it made us want to re-rent, you know, all the previous ones and watch them. And we just randomly find ourselves watching Next Gen. And I think Patrick Stewart and the crew were like all but kind of became my crew that I grew up with, essentially. And that was kind of like my first contact. Was awesome to see in the theater. I think that was the only movie I had, like the first movie I saw in the theater. And it was awesome. That was a blast. That movie's a super fun blockbuster.
Yeah.
Now, Barry, I'm going to ask you a really awkward question, because we seem to be kind of knitting the awkward questions for you at the moment. Now, I'm going to ask you, right, not your favorite episode of Star Trek, because that's too easy, but what's the comfort episode? The one that if you sit down and you say, I just want to put Star Trek on in the background, but I don't necessarily want to watch my favorite episode. What would you just throw on in the background? For me, I'll just give an example. I pick Tin Man from the Next Generation's third season. Is it the best? No, but I like the music of it. I like the setup, so I just throw that on. That's my comfort episode.
Mm-hmm. I do. It's funny. I was very happy that we put out an episode with Twin Twains, kind of, because Time's Arrow cracks me up. Here's that impression of that performance of Twain is awesome, and that's one I tend to put on, because I think it's funny that Data has to, you know, bury his own head. And I also watch, there's a Deep Space Nine episode that I really love. I always get the name wrong. Is it Blood Debts or Blood Oath?
Blood Oath.
Yeah, that one's just awesome. Like that's a movie. Like, I'm like, you don't even need to have any related character to Star Trek at all. And if that was the setting, I'm like, I would watch that movie, you know, like that one's, I always like extrapolating, like, oh, what's the big overarching version of this? And then it makes it even more awesome that those are the original Klingons from TOS, you know, like that's it's a super fun one. Like, I'm like, oh, this, that's one thing I like about Star Trek, is like, you and Lower Decks being a cartoon, like, we can go anywhere. You can do drama, you can do horror, you can do a freaking crime thriller, you know. That's essentially what that episode is to me. It's like
revisit Tuvix.
Yeah. Revisit Tuvix. you know, I you know, another one I was giggle at is the Robin Hood episode with everyone, like
Cupid,
like I think Lixana Troi episodes, like, I think maybe fans at the time were off put by them, or, you know, like, whatever, like, it's an easy one to like, I crack up with them now. Like, they're like, it's funny to see, like, Picard with, I think as a kid I was annoyed at Picard being stuck in Picard Day, like in an elevator with kids, because I'm like, stupid kids. Like, I didn't like kids on TV when I was growing up for some reason, but now I'm like, it is so funny to watch Patrick Stewart like have to putting the characters in awkward positions is super funny to me. And watching the actors, like, kind of, they get to chew up the scenery when that's going on. And, you know, is that the same episode where Worf has to deliver
the baby?
There's so far, like, and you know, I used to watch, you know, Star Trek for like the little bit of spaceships, you know, I feel like, as a very simple minded kid, and now, like, learning that, like, as growing up and, you know, being able to, you know, still enjoy it as an adult, like, I learned, like, oh, the actors were the real, like, special effect. Like, the special effects were like, what, 2-3 minutes out of the episode, more or less, and the rest of the episode is carried on these actors that are great, and they're super funny to watch, and, like, even when they don't realize it, like, they're so fun, they're so good at acting, like, they don't realize how, like, interesting and entertaining they are, you know, like funny.
Barry, just when you're putting together the Lower Decks episode, so as you said, the script is completed, hand it over to yourselves for completion, all that kind of thing. How long does it take from the time you get the script to the episode being finished?
According to our producers, they tell me, they always have to remind me, it's like 18 months or something. I think it's that. It's like a year and a half.
Wow.
Which makes sense. But we're making all 10 at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Roughly. It's like there's like, they're staggered. So, like, my day, you know, like, my day will be, you know, I'll start with storyboards for, like, I'll be in a meeting with storyboards for like 2 hours. That's like an episode coming down the line. And then I'll have to look at, as we were wrapping up the finale for season 4, I'll be looking at, you know, animation retakes for at the next hour for for, let's say, episode 10. After lunch, I'll be looking at composite, which is like, you know, putting the characters on the backgrounds and making them look all pretty and nice. I'll be looking at that for episode 9. And then, you know, maybe at the end of the day, I need to watch and edit for episode 8. So it'll be like various stages. They're all kind of like staggered. And it's once the train's moving, it's very like, you know, assembly line style, where it's like trying to make set the pieces like, or set the track before the train comes, you know, like it's all like overlapping. So like it's roughly like 2 or 3 weeks overlap between the episodes, like when one starts and one ends. So but at certain points though in the pipeline, like we're juggling like all 10 at once at certain points depending on the phase.
So it's not you create one, that's done, you move on to the next one, then that's done. It's they literally are kind of almost running parallel to each other.
Yeah,
to a point.
Yeah, because it's like you know, each phase there's, you know, boards. Well, it's writing, of course. Writing, boards, animatics, animation, or I'm sorry, design. We have to design all stuff for animation. And but the thing is, like, once we have like a like once the animatics kind of slowly coming together, like designers can take, because we're not going to change as much at that point. Like they'll have an idea of like, these are the angles we need, these are the characters we need, these are the props we need, and it goes out to different. It's like a puzzle that we put together in the animatic, and then we break it up into tons of different pieces, and each piece is getting made by different artists. And then at the end, we're trying to put all these pieces back together again to make this puzzle look like it was never broken in the first place. All those departments are going on at different times. Usually it for each department, it feels like one after the other,
right?
But there's still overlap. Like it does feel like that to each when you're in your own phase of it. But for myself and the art director, Mike, and the other producers, it's like we're looking at everything from a global scale.
Yeah. So how much latitude do you have to sort of not dictate, but influence what comes out the script, what goes into the episode, what doesn't get put into the episode?
A lot of the script is we try to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
As far as editing goes, it's kind of like when we're I'm trying so hard just to make sure that the story is told visually, that a lot of the times like I'm relying on Mike to kind of be our, you know, our North Star of what the story is, what the joke is, what each, you know, beat needs to be.
Yeah.
And once we get down to it, he's kind of the ones dictating the most of like, we need to cut this, we got to cut this. Cause he's in his head, he also, I'm relying on him because he has such an innate sense of like comedic timing, and he's hearing the characters, what they say. Sometimes we don't have the voices, so he's having to hear what they say through our scratch and stuff like that. Where I'm mainly trying to put my effort into is trying to make, there's a lot of, like there's the script and then there's the story, when we're boarding, like I'm trying to get our board artists to not just board what's written in the script, because there's a ton of details that are left out, right? Like of the script, like when if you only board the script, you know, there'd only be like two characters on screen most of the time, and it's like, well, there's a crew of people we're looking at as these two characters talk, and like it's like I'm trying to supply the visual context to the script, where I'm like, okay, Ransom needs to be doing this, Freeman needs to be sitting like this, Kayshawn or Shax needs to be here, it's weird that they're not paying attention, like we should have them pay attention. And you know what, I'm not really like cutting shots, but I'm more trying to get our directors to be more efficient in how they're telling the story, and that you don't need three shots to do this, you could do this in one, and it should be funnier because we can see all the characters in this shot, and it'd be funnier to see all the reactions to this moment, because by choosing to do this in a close-up, you're losing tons of story. Like there's the script and the story, and I'm like, you know, go wider so you can see the story as opposed to just cutting into the moment that the script is telling you to.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And then kind of on that, what's been the hardest thing to kind of design or create in Lower Decks?
The Cerritos was one of the hardest things to do. It's always like the hero flagship, and we keep on, you know, I'm always glad we can destroy it a lot of times at the end of the season. I'm like, oh cool, we can add little details, we can add little things that like improve it, you know, along the way. I'm like, oh crap, we forgot to do that. We should do that. The Cerritos was a big long one because it's like the ships are characters, you know. Deep Space Nine was We had all the reference for it, but it was hard just trying to get everybody to catch all the details, and who knows how many details we do miss because we're trying to like parse through photos of the sets, and sometimes not even like the most reliable source is like, well, I think this one's right, but then when I look at it, still the TV show, that one looks off too. Like they probably hit their own circumstances in shooting the show, and stuff isn't exactly you know where it should be according to the encyclopedias and stuff like that. Deep Space Nine was a blast to do. Designing the Packlet ships was fun because it took a while because we were trying to like make like what would the Packlets do as if they made their own bird of prey, and I'd be like, well, it's like they'd be like, we're gonna make our bird now. Yeah. And like in my head, I showed Mike, I'm like, okay, well, here's a bird of prey, and I showed a bald eagle, and I'm like, this is the Packlet one, and it's like a bad taxidermy bald eagle or something. Eyes bulging, something like that. But I mean, we went through a lot of variation. Like we made a mat, like it used to be a mouth, and like I was trying to like sometimes we can overcomplicate things, and like in my head, like I'll almost pile too many jokes on top of something that doesn't need to be a joke. Like the Packlet ship, I was like, well, it should just be a hunk of junk. And then when you get to the middle of it, their little dinky freighter ship is just kind of like awkwardly, like they wouldn't have thought of where to put it. You know, they would have just plucked it in or whatever.
Slammed it in somewhere.
And sometimes it's like, it gets convoluted. And I'm like, oh, I'm convoluting it. I need to stop and like, just kind of throw away what we did and rethink what the ship is. But I'm trying to think.
The on the note of the Packlets.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Whose idea was it to bring the Packlets in?
That was Mike. Mike always had them from the get-go. I think he I also think like there's also like a little bit of a I don't know, it's a Star Trek writer, you know, behind the scenes conversation of like, are you using them? Are you using these guys? Are you using this species? Are you using this? And like, you're trying not to overlap, and it happened. I mean, how can you not overlap?
Pick like, a species same... who no one's using, and
But it's like he's like, Packlets are perfect. You know, it was a weird. You know, I mean, I say it was. It is like there's a weird anti-intelligence era with Trump and stuff like that, and it just kind of made sense, I think, at the time for him. You know, like that's why he kind of like. Had us go to the planet, you know, of
that could be construed slightly.
Yeah, of like these like just, there's just like a weird anti-intellectual, I guess, is that the word I'm looking for? Just like there's some kind of like anti-educated, like there was something about I think Packlets that felt right at the time, you know, like it. And yeah, I think we hadn't seen them in a while, but it was always Mike, like that episode 10. It was kind of a secret. We were trying. It's weird. There's reveals and then there's not reveals, but like. It's the Packlet thing was definitely like we kept under wraps until that last episode came out, and it's fun. It was fun to bring it back. They're fun, big. You know, I love big, thick, fun characters to draw, and they were big hunks of fun.
Which character? So, have you designed any characters?
In a way, yeah. Since I'm like me and our art director are like kind of like the first people to read the script, we do have character designers that start right away, but like Captain Dorg was something I have a lot of sketches of Dorg. I have a lot of the Hunter, oh my gosh, how many seasons have I worked on this show? the alien predator,
well, the one Cranch, that hunts Boimler.
Cranch. Yeah, I forget, Ketchup and Ranch, he's Cranch.
Yeah.
I have how a you lot
remember
of,
the names
yeah. Well, it's like Cranch was the thing that was I totally forgot Cranch. That was like a sauce like that Heinz made, like I don't know, they might still make it, I don't know, but like even in the handout Mike's like, you know, like Cranch, like ketchup and ranch, that sauce, I'm like, oh right, I forgot that came out. But he's I have a lot of sketches of him, like that was one that was like all of us, like it kind of like all of us take stabs at him, and then we kind of see what Mike's because that could have been, you know, there's Predator, you know, it's clearly like a Predator reference, but it's like we've also kind of seen that a little bit in Voyager with that Hunter species, right? Like we don't want to make them like too much like them. The Kazon and
no, you mean the Hirogens?
No, Hirogens.
Hirogens. Yeah. There you Hirogens. Go. Yeah, Kazon's got the big.
Yeah,
the big,
yeah. Even I'm getting
Mike. Mike, yeah, return your nerd card right now. That was an outrageously bad guess.
I agreed. I shouldn't have agreed. I should have called it out because I was like, even as I said, I was like, yeah. Kazon. Wait.
Hirogen.
But Hirogen. Yeah. Yeah, Cranch was one that I have a lot of fun sketches of and have fun doing. And luckily, like, that's the one that, like, pinged for Mike. You know, sometimes it's just like character designers are almost hitting it and not in the, but maybe they're like super close, and I'll just like to have to tell them like, just do this, and I think Mike will like that. You know, like, it's like a little, it's a little like just direction on the end, but they've already like knocked the ball like, you know, 90% of the way there, and it's just a little tap that I gotta give them sometimes just to like hit the likeness or hit something that like is gotcha. Really like. But Cranch and Dorg were ones early on that I spent a lot of time drawing. Mock, yeah, like Mock was some of those. I don't know if you've seen the t-shirts we make, like I look at all the Klingon ones are mine. I guess I like got a thing for Klingons or something, you know. But
Barry,
yeah,
as we're coming to the end of the interview, so I wanted to ask one last question. And so the question we always ask all our guests, what does Star Trek mean to you?
Ooh, big, grandiose question. Star Trek to me, and one thing that I really like about Lower Decks being a more optimistic show is that it is about being your best self. It kind of shows that, like, one thing I really like about Star Trek is, like, it's a world where people are really performing at their best and showing that you can get problem solved together by being your best. And sometimes being your best is having to, it's not about you. Sometimes it's like about stepping back and letting someone else, you know, problem solve or you know, have something compromise, you know, a little bit like that. Like, I think like watching like Geordi, Data, Picard, like having to make tough decisions and perform admirably is a term I think of when I come to Star Trek. And I think it's like what's the word, it's, I don't know, this is a weird way to put it. It's nutritional in a way. It's like good for you. It's like there's something about the attitude that Star Trek, or the what's the word, I'm really bad with words. It's like trying to be your best self. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It's like there's something about it makes you want to, it makes you want to perform as well as the characters are on that show or something. Like, it shows like if you, all of us could do nothing and be lazy, but it, when you watch characters, like, it gives me, it's like, why wouldn't you try harder? Why wouldn't you want to be your best self? Why wouldn't you, like, it's kind of like, I guess it's a little bit of a
just motivator.
Yeah, like it's a good motivator. That's a great word. You all talk on screen a lot more than me, so I'm sure you could explain it a lot better than I can. But there's something about that like that energy, that vibe it gives. It's like it and it's always done that since I was a kid. Like, I always thought, even though I didn't understand the complexities of the issues they were talking about in Star Trek, like I always understood that. Like, I'm like, oh, these people are like really, really good at what they do, you know. And it's inspiring. Vague, bland, boring answer is what that is. Really, really great talking with y'all. I really hope you're enjoying the latest episode. Next episode's gonna be pretty awesome. We got some evil computers returning. Evil AI.
No spoilers.
Yeah. No, not at all.
So Barry, where's the best place for people to reach out to you? So people wanted to contact you or speak to you about anything, where's the best place for them to reach out to you?
I am terrible at social media. I'm only really on Instagram. I like drawings. I like posting drawings. I like seeing other people's drawings. If you want to catch me, it's Barry J. Kelly on Instagram. And awesome. Yeah, you can reach me through there and find a bunch of, you know, dumb little doodles that I do all day.
Awesome. Well, show, anything else you want to ask before we...
Nope, that's it. Barry, thank you so much for coming on the show as well and fitting us in every entire journey up to this point.
Oh, thank you so much. Hopefully we can talk with you guys again.
Awesome. Brilliant. Thanks. All right. Live long and prosper.
Thanks, guys.